They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back. I feel like I've been taking a lot of the intros recently, so remind me next time that you're doing the intro. But welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. I'm Nathan Mogulyines, as always joined by my brother, Elliot Mogulyines. And Elliot, I have a question for you. Before I get to the question, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of my Tim Robinson fans who love I Think You Should Leave on Netflix, his new movie. It's not his, but he's starring in it, and it seems very in keeping with his humor sensibilities. His new movie got a trailer this week. I'm very excited for it. We're not going to banter about this because Elliot is not interested and hasn't seen it, but it's called Friendship. A24 is putting it out. It's about Tim Robinson trying to befriend Paul Rudd. The trailer looks crazy. The reviews are really positive. I'm very excited for it. Anyway, Elliot, the question I had for you is, what are your thoughts on, I think, one of the bigger talking, maybe not bigger talking points, but a talking point I've seen brought up quite a bit with this Oscar season is the question of category fraud, where someone who should be in lead actor is placed in supporting actor to increase their odds of winning in that category. Some of the people who are kind of under, and this isn't the first time this has come up, so I was wondering what your, I gotta clarify that question. So people like Ariana Grande is in supporting actress, despite the fact that you could argue that she's co-lead with Cynthia in Wicked. Emilia Perez is another movie. Zoe Saldana, there's an argument to be made that Zoe Saldana could be considered the lead of the movie, or a lead of the movie, and Kieran Culkin is another example of a person who's in supporting. He's basically a lead for the movie. A couple years ago, Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield were both put in supporting actor for Judas and the Black Messiah, begging the question who the lead of the movie was, if it wasn't either of them. But, you know, do you have thoughts on this? Do you think there should be a clear distinction between lead and supporting?
Well, I think that is, that practice is at least a little bit duplicitous. Mm. Like, The Martian being submitted as a comedy for the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
No one really believes that. Yeah. I feel like I have an intellectual stance on this, but not a particularly emotional stance. Hmm. Like, I agree. I think it's bad. I think that probably, well, I don't know. Maybe you could bang out some kind of equation for percentage of screen time or something like that to come to, like, a quantifiable standard. But I'm not angry about it. I'm not going to be picketing outside someone's house saying, "Put Ariana Grande in the supporting actress column, dang it."
You mean lead actress.
Yes, lead actress. It's just, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just kind of petty. Yeah. It's just a bunch of rich, out-of-touch weirdos jockeying for golden statues. And I'm like, dude, I think you need a little bit of perspective here. If it is so important to you that you're willing to compromise yourself, compromise your integrity. I don't know. Maybe take up landscape photography.
Well,
kind of work that out.
I don't know if the actors themselves are the people who determine what category. Well,
yeah, I'm talking about like the producers and
stuff. Oh, sure.
Such.
But it does feel kind of unfair that like Kieran Culkin is in 80 to 90% of A Real Pain, and I actually that's not the example I want. Ariana Grande is in like 70 to 80% of Wicked. And she's up against Isabella, I can't remember her last name, but the woman from Conclave, who's in like 15% of the movie, has one meaningful scene. And it just feels kind of ridiculous. Like, how are you supposed to compare those two performances? It just feels, yeah. That's what I think. Although I do think, I don't know. It's interesting. Because I love movies, I love talking about, you know, exactly what you're talking about, pointless distinctions in movies, where it's like, oh, is Zoe Saldana the lead in Emilia Perez? We enter the story through her eyes, but then we do, you know, she does kind of drop off the map. So, I don't know. I don't think it matters that
who
much.
Wants to dedicate more thought to Emilia Perez than absolutely necessary?
So true, Elliot. So true. Oh, gosh. Funny. Anyway, that was the only thing that I had really to banter about. Send us an email. Are you, are you in a tizzy about category fraud? Do you have thoughts on who should be put in what places? You know, send us an email. Let us know. In the meantime, Elliot, you have picked a movie for us to review here on this day. Introduce the audience to it. What's up? What's the deal?
Well, today I've made a bit of a mistake because I wanted us to review a Tim Burton movie, and I was thinking in my head as opposed to thinking in my hand. What is the most quintessentially Tim Burton movie? Like, what's the movie that condenses? That's a perfect distillation of his style. And for some reason, I thought that that was Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Having watched the movie now, that is not the case. I think it's recognizably a Tim Burton movie, but it really should have been Beetlejuice. But c'est la vie. Go ahead.
I was surprised that you picked... When you said we should do a Tim Burton, let's do Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I was like, that's not the Tim Burton I would have picked. I would have gone, Beetlejuice, maybe Batman. I don't know.
I had two movies you haven't seen.
I saw both of those.
Really?
How did I know
that?
I don't know.
Well, you must have hid it from me or something. I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is that the first time I watched this movie, I was a child, or I was younger. And so, in my mind, it was a lot more macabre and gothic and just in line with his later work than it actually was. Because the points where that does kind of shine through just took up excess space in my mind. But... this is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it, and let's talk about Pee-wee's Big Adventure. This is a... Let me actually take a look. I should really have all this prepared beforehand. It's a 1985 comedy family film, an adaptation of a famous and well-liked character, Pee-wee Herman, invented and played by Creep. Reuben Paul.
Paul Reuben,
yes. I did some reading on this movie recently and learned that, we have on our hands a bit of a guy. But I guess we can talk about that if you want, but we don't need to start right now. Anyway, it's directed by Tim Burton. It's about a... young, old, middle-aged,
a person,
unclear, a person of an indeterminate age, certainly a childlike person,
yep,
named Pee-wee Herman, who is defined by his love of pranks, his love of all things eccentric, really, and especially his love of his bike, which is stolen, and the movie's about him getting it back, and also getting into a heaping helping of shenanigans.
Hijinks.
Hijinks, yep. Zany misadventures. So that's the film. There's not a whole lot else to say about it. Like I said, I first watched this movie long ago when I was young. It's well-liked by our parents. I'm actually, I'm at home right now with our parents, and man, they were having a grand old time with this movie, let me tell you. Yeah. And this is the second time I've ever watched it.
Yeah.
The first time I remembered enjoying it, I was like, yeah, that was good, but it was creepy. It was too scary for a little old me. And now, of course, I'm jaded and desensitized. So, yeah, that's the movie. I'll just give you a brief taster of my thoughts. I thought this movie was good. I thought it was funny. There were multiple times where I laughed out loud. I did think that Burton's style added a much-needed flair to it, because the movie the plot is very thin. There are definite times where there's clear filler. And so I think in a different movie, in a movie that's shooting a little bit straighter, I think that it would have been markedly worse. Mm. But I think that the style, the inherent charm, and the breakneck pace, all, and the variety, just the sheer variety of the hijinks that we are treated to, are enough to pull it together and make something that I thought was just clean, good, clean fun. So yeah, that's my stance. Nathan, what about you? Let us have it.
Well, like I said, I was fascinated that you picked this movie, because this is only my second time watching it. I remember it was in a batch of VHS tapes that we had that we hadn't seen yet, that it was like with Airplane and Fiddler on the Roof. It was with like a bunch of VHS tapes that our parents were like, oh, we gotta watch them and decide if we want to keep them. And so we watched this movie. I don't know why they enjoy it as much as they do. I don't know if they had seen the TV show and such. This is a movie that had a couple of things that kind of stuck in at least my childlike brain, such as the road signs getting increasingly convoluted, Large Marge doing her little face Tim Burton thing, and the Remember the Alamo joke that really killed me as a child. I still find it very funny. So going back to it, yeah, much like you, I'm jaded, I'm a cynic, I have no joy left from my youth now, and I'll be honest, Elliot, this movie, it kind of annoyed me. And I think eventually I started coming around on it, but especially the first, like, 30 minutes, I was very irritated with everything Pee-wee did, and I really wanted him to be injured in a car accident or something. I was not happy spending time good with heavens. This guy.
Well, that's quite bad. I was going to say that I'm not in disagreement with you, but that is extreme. So I am in disagreement with you.
Okay.
Had you stopped at just finding it annoying, I would have said I'm not in disagreement with you, because I do think that the opening is one of the weaker segments of the film. It takes a little bit to get going. Again, a lot of this is filler.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's an hour and 30 minutes. I'm going to say that, like, charitably, 15 minutes of that is probably trimmable.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, easy cuts. Like, if you really wanted to get in there and make it as lean as possible, I'm guessing that you could probably get this sucker down to, like, a TV special length.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to do that. And so we have filler. That we have the equivalent of Itchy and Scratchy cartoons on The Simpsons, where the writers are just like, thank goodness we have this stupid, repetitive joke so we can get this up to the length it needs to be. And a lot of that is present in the opening, because it's basically just Pee-wee kind of going about his day-to-day business, and then even after the bike is stolen, there's a pretty extensive, I mean, extensive relatively speaking, for a movie that's an hour and 30 minutes long,
yeah.
Something that lasts like 10 minutes is extensive.
Yeah.
So there's an extensive, like, preamble even to actually getting on the road, which I think is where the movie really starts to come into its own. But you do have to kind of get over that hill of Pee-wee going through his morning routine, arguing with Francis, going shopping, laughing at every single possible conceivable moment, which I did not enjoy. I think that I kind of found the whole, I found him crashing his bike to be a little bit funny.
Mm-hmm.
I like the joke about he's in this like gag shop and the guy is offering him a shrunken head, and then he offers him a normal size head, and then a massive head. I thought that was pretty funny. I felt bad for Dottie. Holy cow, man. She just seems like a really nice, sweet girl, and Pee-wee is shutting her down. Something fierce. But aside from that, I was thinking, like, dang, when are we gonna get this show on the road? Nathan and I gather, well, I mean, you've already said that that's pretty much your opinion on the opening of the movie.
Well, and I think I mentioned this in our review of Love Actually, that I don't understand the love for Mr. Bean or Mr. Bean-esque characters who are kind of just like agents of vaguely malevolent chaos to the people around them. And Pee-wee Herman, I feel like, kind of falls into that same camp, although it feels even more mean-spirited at points. Like you said, he's, like, needlessly rude to Dottie, and, right, he's a silly character, okay? And maybe I'm taking it too seriously, being like, hey, this guy's kind of a jerk, because it's like, well, he's just being funny. I don't find that particularly funny. Like, sometimes people being a jerk can be mildly amusing. I'm a big fan of Rick and Morty. There's things that Rick says that I'm like, that's funny. Like, that's a funny way to rebuff someone else's attempts to connect with you as a human being. Pee-wee Herman's just kind of annoying. I don't really love voices. So every time he speaks in a goofy voice, it kind of irritates me. His laugh, like you said, he's laughing at everything. These are classic Pee-wee Herman things. And I'm not happy about it. And it feels like the beginning of the movie is where he is most aggressively Pee-wee Herman. It feels the most like what I have to assume the TV show is like, that it's got, right, his morning routine. It's got him interacting with some other person that he's got beef with for some reason in Francis. And, yeah. So, the beginning of the movie, I don't get it. I feel like I would have to have watched the show to really appreciate some of the stuff that's going on. And I think even if I watched the show, I would be annoyed by some of the things Pee-wee Herman does. I think the only saving grace in the opening is, and this kind of connects to what you've already said, that it is recognizably Tim Burton, and some of the classic Tim Burton sort of things that show up here in the opening, I find very fun. His jumbo-sized knife and fork that were both, like, bendy for whatever reason, I found to be just, like, a very charming image. When he goes into his bathroom and it looks like his window goes outside and then a bunch of fish float in, again, that feels like a very classic, whimsical Tim Burton sort of thing. So the set design, the production design, the design of the props, really fantastic, classic Tim Burton-y sort of things that I did enjoy in the beginning. And then every time Pee-wee wasn't talking, I was like, this is, you know, pleasant to look at, I suppose.
Well, you should not have mentioned Rick and Morty if you wanted me to agree with you. Actually, if you wanted to make me seem like a terrible person, all you would have to, you could just say, like, I actually think that miners, coal miners, deserve more protection from black lung. By the way, have I told you about my love for Rick and Morty? I would just have to disagree with you because I've identified you as an enemy. Wow. For liking that show because I detest it.
This episode's just a minefield for you in terms of agreement. I keep saying things that you're like, yeah, I agree, and then I throw another thing in that you're like, I hate you. That's awful.
That's true. But actually, all jokes aside, I think that we may have hit upon something, a more substantive reason for why I was a little bit less irritated with the opening than you were. And that's because I'm actually really into characters like Mr. Bean. And I automatically pegged this as a character in the tradition of Mr. Bean. Or Mr. Bean is a character in the tradition of Pee-wee Herman, as the case may be. Or really, they're just all characters in the tradition of Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. And okay, I really like that. I really like that physical, very expressive type of comedy. So that was a little something that was keeping me engaged, is because, I'm just into that kind of thing. The slapstick. The slapstick adjacent comedy. I definitely agree that, and this is a good time to talk about Tim Burton, because I'm a casual Burton fan. I don't know where you are in regards to him, Nathan, but I like his style, and I think that his style is not unwelcome in this movie, despite this being a very light, very thin kids movie. I thought that those more imaginative elements, like you were talking about, worked really well, but even the more macabre kind of darker elements like Large Marge or the creepy clown doctors in the one dream sequence, yeah. I felt like, I don't know, they were just a little bit of extra spice. Just a little something that kind of shook things up. And I felt that they were really welcome. And another thing that I really like is practical effects and makeup. And that's how they made all of those, that's how they made Large Marge, that's how they made the creepy clown doctors into creepy clown doctors.
Yeah.
So, here's another thing, if you wanted to manipulate me, you could just, into doing something terrible, or you could just propose it to me in the form of practical effects and makeup, and I would be like, oh yeah, that's great, I'll go along with it.
Wow.
So, I don't think we have too much else to say about Pee-wee himself. No. He's fine for me, at least. I like the style of Chaplin and Keaton and Mr. Bean and even Looney Tunes that he's inheriting. So I thought it was fine, and he's really just like, he's really just there to experience hijinks, to kind of like be a sounding board for a procession of side characters. And that's where I think the movie really came into its own, because I thought that it had a really strong slate of side characters. I really liked Mickey, the convict who cut a tag off of a mattress, and that's why he's on the lam. I liked Large Marge, the ghost. I liked Simone, the Francophile waitress at a truck stop. And I liked all of the people in Texas who just loved being in Texas and remembering the Alamo. So, Nathan, what was your favorite side character or like side plot, if you had one? Maybe you just hated all of them.
No, this is where I think the movie really comes into its own, and I think that's a very astute observation that. Pee-wee is very much in the vein of these classic trickster sort of slapstick characters. I will say, personally, I think they hit different on mute, which is why I'm a big fan of Keaton and Chaplin, and maybe not so much a fan. And even Mr. Bean, maybe if I watch more of his stuff, because I don't think he talks. I think him not talking is part of his shtick. Yeah. But anyway, I think the movie really comes into its own as soon as he's out looking for his bike, he's interacting with people. All of the strongest, funniest moments come when this happens. I think probably my favorite character is Mickey. I think he's very funny. It seems kind of like, I don't know if you felt this, but it felt kind of like he did something else to end up in jail, but he saw Pee-wee's innocence and like changed it to be something else, because it kind of feels like he's ramping up to say, like, I killed a guy. And it could just be, like, that's the joke, is that he's ramping up to do something, say something violent, and then he doesn't. But it just felt like there was a look where he was like, oh, Pee-wee's, like, mentally a child, so let's tone this down for him. But I think he's very funny. I like all of the characters who are, like, nice to Pee-wee, because it's funny to me that they would be instantly like kind and attracted to someone who like doesn't seem to have it all together or seems like a bit of a goofball. That Mickey and Simone both quickly become friends with Pee-wee despite him doing very little to like earn that friendship. But yeah, Mickey's great. I love the gag at the end when he's bringing him his food and it's just like a wrench inside a hot dog bun. And he's like, oh, dang it. Oh, thanks for trying, Pee-wee. I find that kind of funny. But yeah, honestly, all of the side characters I think are pretty solid. And this is where the movie really starts to come onto its own for me, when it's all of these just kind of hijinks-based vignettes of Pee-wee trying to find his bike and trying to, you know, survive the American Southwest.
That is, I think, probably a lot of this is because this is based on a show that it's best when it's episodic. When it's just, you could pretty easily break this up into episodes of a TV show if you wanted to. Of course, the one with Mickey, his encounter with Marge, the fight with Simone's boyfriend, the stuff at the Alamo. It all slots very easily into the formula of a piecemeal, just hijinks of the week formula. Which is why I think that the weakest part is the beginning, because even after the climax, the movie never really tries again to be, plot-focused. It's always concept-focused.
Sure.
In a way, like, we talked a little bit about when we reviewed the Simpsons movie, how Simpsons episodes, because their episodes are often concept-focused, not plot-focused. It's just about the idea of Pee-wee encountering a ghost, and it just kind of goes from there. It doesn't really have a strong plot in mind. And that continues even on past past when he finally gets his bike back. Although, even within that, I have to say, again, like, there are just these moments where I'm like, this is filler. And that's fine when it's working, as with Large Marge. It's less fine when it's Pee-wee just straight up randomly comes across a burning pet shop and has to clear him out. Like, that is pure filler. And I thought it was mildly funny how he kept on, how he had to kind of resist his urge to leave the snakes in the fire. But on the whole, I was just kind of, all right, this is, let's, can we move on, please? Can we do something else? But yeah, I want to talk about, dude, the music in this movie was a bop. Holy cow. Danny Elfman, he's a very well-regarded film composer. And yeah, he's just, he's bringing his A game here. I really like, I wish I knew the musical term for it, but it's got that strong beat of just the bum 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 bum. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that, and it's just really energetic, and it's just really catchy. I listened to it a little bit after the movie was done. Wow. I listened to it casually a little bit, which yeah, I've been talking for a while, so now Nathan, it's your turn to say things. That's our formula.
Well, yeah, I agree. I like Danny Elfman. Speaking of The Simpsons, composer of their iconic theme music.
Dude, sorry. Speaking of The Simpsons, did you notice Phil Hartman is in this?
No, what? When?
He has a single line when Francis is, at the very end, Francis is talking like he and Pee-wee are friends. Yeah. Phil Hartman says, "So when did you become blood brothers?"
Oh my, I feel like I recognize the voice, but I didn't place it right away as Phil Hartman.
It was like a bomb going off in the living room last night, because both Dad and I were like, "What the was that Phil Hartman?" And then he never says another word, but like that is his Troy McClure voice. That's probably just his voice in general.
Yeah.
And then yeah, I stuck around to watch the credits to confirm, yeah, it's just Phil Hartman is in here for a single line.
That's funny, because that would have been before, yeah, he had really, like, joined SNL and gotten famous, so that's funny. But yeah, Danny Elfman's score is good. I feel like it's March music by way of the circus, which I feel like every Tim Burton movie is kind of circus-esque. I can actually think of a couple that take place at the circus or in a circus, so very appropriate there. You never said, do you have a favorite of these side characters?
Oh, well, mine would be Large Marge, just because I think the joke of her, say, it looked like this, and then doing the face, I just think that's really funny. Although I do love Mickey.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I have a ton else to say. I agree with a lot of the stuff that you said, that there's bits of filler to this movie. Yeah, the pet store bit, him not wanting to take the snakes, that's kind of funny. Is it worth the, you know, 5 minutes or whatever it takes up to do it? I did really enjoy the James Bond spoof at the end when they're watching the movie that Hollywood made about Pee-wee's adventure. I thought that was pretty funny, as I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I've seen all of the James Bond movies. I'm a true James Bond fan. I haven't read the book, so I'm kind of a fake fan, but I thought the bit was funny. I found it very, you know, enjoyable. As well as him taking candy to all of the different people that he had encountered in his journey. I thought that was fun. I like it when movies do things where it's like, hey, remember all these people who showed up earlier in the movie? Isn't that great? I think it's fun when they do that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think, again, this is the risk that you run. when you make a very short movie and you pump it full of filler, you're risking, like, whole percentages of your movie just being written off. Like the beginning, like the pet shop thing. Honestly, I feel like you could have reduced the chase through the studio by a little bit as well. Also, why were Toho Godzilla movies really filmed in California? Somehow I doubt it. Although I thought it was a little funny how Godzilla ended up in Santa's sleigh, and for some reason he had his arm around Santa, like he was trying to, I don't know, flirt with him, take him for a drive around town. I do want to hit the technical elements, which we've kind of already talked about a little bit, but one thing that you know that you're getting with a Burton movie is you know you're getting really good sets, really good costumes, really good, charming stop-motion practical effects. And that's all here. I loved Pee-wee's house. There's just so much going on in it. It's like an ADHD kid's dream. I loved the dream sequences because that's really where Burton's style is coming to the forefront. The stop-motion dinosaur eating the bike, Large Marge herself, the creepy clown doctors. I just really like all that stuff. And again, this is the stuff that is making the movie for me. In addition to the humor that I find in it, I'm here for the style. Sometimes I know that usually Nathan is the one who's defending a movie on the basis of but the style. And I'm asking for more. And to be clear, I would have liked more. I think that more would have made the movie better. But the style is enough in this instance to like push me through, to keep me engaged, because I'm like, oh man, this bit is lasting a long time and I'm not enjoying it. But around the corner, I know there's just going to be some kind of quirky, weird monster design or something that only Burton could do that's just going to bring me right back in.
Yeah, well, and this is an example of style not necessarily being a style that I enjoy. I think it's mildly charming. I'm able to recognize that it's technically proficient. I don't love it. I don't know. It's kind of goofy for the sake of goofiness at some points for me. I've already mentioned that I don't find Pee-wee very funny as a lead. So I think the whole shtick, I can think of a lot of other movies that I find that I enjoy much more that have a similar style of slapstick comedy and, you know, just kind of silly things going on.
Well, I agree. I can also think of some of those, and we'll be talking about some of those very soon. But first, I think if we're all ready, we can go ahead and rate it.
Sounds great to me.
All right. Thought this movie was good. I enjoyed it. It was a struggle. This is one of those movies where sometimes a movie is like the good and the bad are kind of mixed together, and it's hard to extract them. I feel like this is an example of a movie where what's good and what's bad is very distinct. And it kind of represents two opposing forces that are fighting for your ultimate response of, like, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? And I think that there's enough good to win the day and make it so that I enjoyed this movie. Those are good side characters, great music, Burton style. But they are fighting against filler, a long opening, and a less than stellar central character that I can't ignore in the final offing. So my rating's going to be a B minus. It's on the good side. It's on the above average side, but it's like just squeaking in there.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same as you. Although, and actually, I think my score is fairly close to being the same as yours. Although, again, I will point out that when our scores line up, it's not super fair because technically you are missing a part of the scoreboard that I have the ability to use. But I'm going to give this movie a 6 out of 10. I'm fairly unmoved by it. I don't like the opening, but as soon as it gets going, I'm enjoying it, or at least I'm not actively hating the time I'm spending with it. So eventually it gets to a place that's fairly positive, but even when it gets going, there's still moments that it loses me, it loses my interest, it's not doing something I find funny or enjoyable, so... Yeah, that's the score I'm going to give it.
It's interesting. You ever heard of, I think it was how Michelangelo described making a sculpture, that he could see the sculpture in the block of stone, and he was just kind of carving around it? Yeah. You heard that before?
Yes, I've heard that.
I feel like that's a similar thing with this movie, where I can see the good movie in it, and I just needed someone to get in there and, like, cut everything that was bad out, and just, like, make a TV special.
Yeah.
Like Charlie Brown. Those movies rule. And they're, like, only 40 minutes long.
So true.
But anyway, let's talk recommendations. Nathan, I'm going to have you go first, because I've actually changed my recommendation over the course of this episode. And if I need to change it back, because I've accidentally chosen what you've chosen, we should probably do that seamlessly. So go ahead, give us your recommendation.
That's kind of funny, because I also changed what I had originally intention to recommend. I was originally going to recommend my favorite Tim Burton movie, which I'll still throw a shout out to Big Fish. I think it's really, really good. And if you liked this movie, most likely you would also like Big Fish. But I'm going to actually throw it back to a different screwball comedy that I love that I think owes much more to Looney Tunes than this movie does. That's going to be Peter Bogdanovich's What's Up, Doc? This is, if you've never heard of this, which is very possible, this is an ode to the screwball comedies of the past from the 70s. So the past being like the 40s. But it stars Barbara Streisand as kind of a classic. She's literally the Bugs Bunny character in this movie. If you couldn't guess from the title, it's borrowing heavily from Looney Tunes shorts, the Looney Tunes sort of ethos. It follows an incredibly convoluted, like, not that convoluted plot, but it follows four separate identical plaid bags as they are mixed and matched by multiple different people with multiple different objectives in relation to what is in those four plaid bags. It is super funny. I loved it so much. I feel like I forced multiple people to watch it in the months following my first watch, because I was like, guys, this is so funny. You have to watch this, because I'm not going to stop quoting what I find funny in this movie. And that's so much. I love the Looney Tunes. I grew up watching the Looney Tunes show, which isn't the exact same thing as the original Looney Tunes cartoons, but I did watch some of those too, and this movie is just fantastic. As an ode to screwball comedies, as an ode to Looney Tunes, just as a generally immaculately constructed film, it's a ton of fun. So I think if you liked Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I think it's very probable you would also like What's Up, Doc, which for my money is way funnier, and I find Barbara Streisand a way more compelling central character than Pee-wee Herman.
Very interesting. I don't know about that. I can give that a soft second. I do not like that movie nearly as much as you do, but I still can see the appeal. And I also really like Looney Tunes. Well, we've taken, like, completely different tacks, because my recommendation is going to be Finding Nemo.
What the
Now, I ended up choosing that because I think that Finding Nemo is structured in a very similar way to Pee-wee's Big Adventure, in that they're both kind of about trips, they're about journeys, with a lot of episodic encounters with a wide variety of quirky side characters. The only difference being that Finding Nemo is better. That Finding Nemo is that and. Like I said just a few minutes ago, that I would have liked more from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and Finding Nemo is the hijinks, the episodic side character encounters, plus the emotion, the heart, the feels. If you want to hear more about Finding Nemo, you can go ahead and listen to our review of it. But yeah, that's my recommendation. If you liked Pee-wee Herman for those reasons, for the side characters, for the road trip, for the journey, but you did want more, go ahead and watch Finding Nemo. Do it if you haven't already somehow.
Yeah, that's a great, I mean, you know, yeah, listen to the episode, but yeah, that's a great movie. And there's a very similar structure for sure.
You know what else is great? The fact that life is hard and full of disappointments.
How is that great? That's what a terrible segue.
Look, I'm not very creative. I can't think on my feet. It's literally all I could do to keep myself from just saying life is hard and full of disappointments, just like dropping it in context free.
That's too bad. I'm sitting down, so I'm thinking on my the seat of my pants.
Hey.
I'm so funny, bro. Anyway.
I can tell that one was not something that was thought about and considered before you said it.
I mean, I thought it up, and I gauged how funny do I think this is, and I was like, it's funny enough to say. It's not the best joke I'll ever tell, but it's a solid, you know, 6 good out of 10 joke. Yeah, it's good enough for radio. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Be sure, like I said at the beginning, send us an email if you have some thoughts on the Oscars categories, if you have thoughts on Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Did you love this movie growing up? Did you watch the show? What do you think of the connection between Paul Reubens and Charlie Chaplin, besides the fact that they're both kind of creeps?
Yeah, we will read out emails. That's the appeal. That's what you're getting for your time.
That's what we
chance
promise.
Yeah, the chance to get your thoughts out to a vast listener base.
Huge, huge listener base. But anyway, we're going to be back next week, so be sure to, you know, be excited for that. Be sure to tune in, and have a great week in between.